call a second monthly meeting of the Port of Port Townsend for April 23rd to order. Stand for the Pledge of Allegiance.
I pledge allegiance to the flag of the United States of America and to the republic for which it stands, one nation, under God, indivisible, with liberty and justice for all.
Okay, so the agenda. Do we have any additions or corrections to the agenda?
I have a question, quick question. I had asked to add a subject matter to the agenda last week in regards to discussion in regards to project management plan implementation, coming up with some ideas and how that could work for us. And it was my understanding it was going to be on the agenda, but I see it's not now.
Well, actually, that was item B. We're trying to figure out, basically, when item B comes up on the first reading, I was going to say, take it away, Brad.
Okay. I read that. I don't see anything in there that mentions anything about a project business management kind of plan or anything like that. And that's the reason why I asked it. This is talking about new concepts and ideas. So I see your point.
Okay, yeah. We weren't exactly sure exactly what you were trying to articulate with that. So we tried to figure out as best way we could put it, and this is it. So...
Yeah, and I put out, Brad, that it just something like that, it seems like it'd be better to put it in a workshop than it would to get it in a port commission meeting. I mean, it would give us more time to flesh out what exactly we're after.
Yeah, but I think that right now, having it here under the first reading, at least we can figure it out what it is we're talking about, figure out what the need is, what our proposed solution is, and you can give us your ideas as what you had in mind. I don't know.
All right. Very good.
I was getting multiple directions from multiple commissioners, so
So is that satisfactory?
Yeah, thank you.
Good. Okay. Any other additions to the agenda?
Not a big change to the agenda, but we have Bart and Carrie from the Wooden Boat Foundation Maritime Center that would like to brief you on planning for the festival. And if we could give them 5 minutes in public comments, it would be nice.
Great, we'll do that.
Then they can leave. Don't have to stay for the rest of it.
Okay, so I guess that means there are no additions or corrections. Just some things to make sure we talk about.
I'll make a motion we approve the agenda.
Okay.
Second.
All in favor? Aye.
Aye.
Okay, consent agenda. Has everyone had a chance to look at the consent agenda?
I have.
Okay, I move we approve the consent agenda.
Second.
All in favor?
Aye.
Aye. Okay, it's time for public comments. So we'll let you guys start first, whichever one wants to go. Or both.
Yeah. I'm Carrie Andrews. This is Barb Traylor. We're the festival directors for the Wooden Boat Festival.
We'll come up a little closer to the recording.
Oh, okay. We basically wanted to come and we wanted to thank the port for their support in the past of the festival. Port's been a big supporter of the festival for 38 years, and it's that kind of support that makes the work that we do all year round possible. The festival is the single biggest fundraiser that we do to support our programming all year long at the Maritime Center, and we appreciate very much, especially at a time when it's been harder and harder for a lot of businesses to provide that same level of support. So we are grateful for that. Last year when we try to do it yearly or sometimes a couple times a year, check in with the port and just make sure that we're working together well and what can we do differently and what help do we need. And last year Jim let us know that in the transfer between the city and the port around some of the docks that the use of Union Wharf and City Dock was no longer going to be able to be included in our sponsorship that the port does with us. So we just wanted to address briefly what that means for us.
And in the old sponsorship agreement, the City Dock and Union Wharf were given to us for free for the weekend. And we use that dockage for bringing tall ships to town. And as you know, tall ships are a huge draw.
The city
gave it to us, correct. And so we use those docks for bringing tall ships to town, which are a huge draw. This is a Victorian seaport. These are all tall ships that get paid thousands of dollars. Generally, their fee is $10,000 to bring a tall ship to your town for the weekend. And they do come to Port Townsend and they do come to the Wooden Boat Festival for free, largely because we make it accommodating. We're able to give them free moorage. We're able to let them charter. And we basically do everything we can to get these gorgeous ships here. And as I'm sure you're aware, when they're in town, it's not just about who's at the festival. The whole town really benefits from this. And this year we've got Lady Washington coming. We've got Virginia V coming. We've got some really cool boats coming. And just as a side note, that we have the other big dock in town that can accommodate a tall ship, and we almost never charge anybody all year for that, because we just believe so strongly in how important this is to the town to be bringing in great big boats. We've got a big Westport coming in tomorrow. And so it's an important thing. It's certainly important to us. We can't pass along the fees that would be incurred by us to the tall ships, because they get paid to go other places. And they've told us that, you know, we have to continue to offer these things for them to make it as good of a money maker as we can for them. So then those fees would come out of our programs and directly out of what we're trying to bring to our local community. So we would ask that you consider honoring what the city used to do in comping us those docks for those days during the Wooden Boat Festival. And we think it adds a great deal to the town and the community and the history and our culture. And we hope you'll consider that.
And just for background, the long relationship that we've had with the festival, we worked out many years ago. They actually write us a pretty healthy check. We essentially turn over all of Point Hudson for that long weekend. And they give us free booth space so we can set up our booths at the festival, et cetera. So I think we, you know, let's look at it and bring back a recommendation to you.
So last year, the docks were still under the control of the city, not us?
No, we had just taken them over last year, just before the festival, and the commission at that time said, let's leave it the way it is and we'll give it to the new commission to decide. So that's why I had them come and point to the new commission.
Great.
Yeah.
And we'll start meeting, you know, a month or so before and work out anything that is different. And then right after the festival, we also have a kind of a after action session where we kind of look at what went right and what went wrong and how to make it better the next year. So.
And from our perspective, our relationship with the port has only been improving over the past few years. And we are very grateful for the support of the port, particularly the port staff. The last couple of years, it's been made the festival really seamless for us. So,
I have a couple questions. One, so we have the Yankee Clipper boat down here, and it seems awkward that you say that these boats are going to come here for free and then charter out and make money off of that facility. How do you guys feel about that? Do you think that's a fair thing to let them come and make money while it's free? Can we just dovetail onto that? You know, there's a lot of costs involved with like maintenance of the docks. We just went around on where we're at with these docks, which is not in very good shape at the moment. We've got a lot of situations to resolve with that. So I think those would be a couple of concerns I would have going into this, but I'll let you.
Right, I understand that. It's a matter for the tall ships. Most cities pay them $10,000 to come visit for a weekend. That's the value that they bring to the community. And so whatever we can do to bring that to our community without incurring those expenses and bringing those opportunities, I've been deeply in conversations with them all this year and telling them about not just this, but you know, the whole chartering issue, and if they don't get their numbers up, they just won't come back. So it's not, we don't have a lot of them on the West Coast. We don't have a lot of them available to us. And Lady Washington and Adventurous are some of the kind of our hometown ones that we like to try to help as much as we can.
And I would add that they are educational vessels for the most part. They are not, I mean, every
commercial.
Virginia 5, Lady Washington, Adventurous, they're all nonprofit organizations that are running huge educational programs. So for them, chartering just offsets. Virginia 5 isn't going to make enough to pay for the...
They're trying to make their gas money.
Yeah, basically, you know. So it's not... And we do have really clear arrangements with who can charter during the festival and who can't. And basically, we're trying to help them recoup their costs so that it doesn't come out of our pocket to bring them here.
Yeah.
So.
Thanks.
right. Thank you for your.
Yeah, thank you.
Thank you. Thanks, Jim.
Okay, any other public comments? Bill Putney?
So, I'd like to thank Brad and Pete for stepping up to come to the April 3rd airport, state of the airport.
April?
Or I'm sorry, May 3rd.
Oh, good, thank you.
Listen, May 3rd, state of the airport get together, and I'd like to extend my own personal invitation to Steve.
Can I bring my 93-year-old mom with me who came up from Marcy, Idaho one time a year? And
maybe we'll get her a plane ride.
Maybe Pete will give her a plane ride. Okay, anyway, that's it. Thank you.
Yep. Or should you just stay out at Spruce Goose? Mm-hmm. Well, you know, a lot of times my wife will come out and just wait for me there.
Hang out.
Spend money. So.
She's probably coming to see Steve.
Yeah. She didn't get to come last year because my kidney was in pieces. So this is to make up for a year's absence. Okay, any other public comments not related to the agenda? Going once? Going twice? All right. We'll move to the second reading. There's no second reading action items. We'll go to the first reading, discussion only. We're going to have a good discussion now about Union Wharf and City Dock.
Well, I just wanted to just kind of cover some of it. You know, some of the concerns that were recently raised about both of the structures, and I think some people didn't realize that we have not been the owners of these two structures for very long. We finally got the transfer done last summer as part of the broad legal settlement with the city on the Katai. And you were still on the board when you signed that. It was actually settled in October, I think, of 2012. But, you know, all the title company paperwork and the actual transfer of all the individual properties wasn't consummated until June of last year. So we knew there were some liabilities in those two wharfs because the city had not been maintaining them. But looking at the broad settlement agreement, we got a lot of other things that really long-term are going to be beneficial to the port. You know, the vacating all the street rights of ways within the boat haven, so we're free to build buildings and move marine trades around where they want to be rather than where the city wants us not to be. And the Katai was actually going to be a bigger liability than the two wharfs in the long run. With a number of issues over there, from the homeless to the restrooms that don't work to everything else. So anyway, long story short, we have done quite a bit of maintenance to date. The removable floats, which will be going in about mid-May. If you remember, I came to you for approval to full maintenance on that. In fact, Bones did the work on that. Thank you. It was a little over $15,000. That's why I brought it to the commission. So that's all done. They're looking good. Like I said, be going in mid-May with boating season. We redid a lot of the electrical, especially on Union Wharf. The lights that didn't work for forever now work. We've been doing, add more cleats, things of that sort. There's still a lot to do. And I think as we go around in our facilities review, we can look a little bit closer at some of these things. And it's like anything, even though Union Wharf is not required to have any fire suppression system, if we feel we want to go that extra mile and put it in there, that's great, but that'll be a capital improvement of about $250,000. So you'd have to factor that into future budgets and all that sort of thing. So I just wanted to make sure we're all aware that, you know, we have been working on them. We've only had them less than a year now, about 10 months more to follow. And we're down this afternoon. The cruise ship is back for the second time. It's here last week. Everything moored up fine. We asked the captain about the other facilities that he has to dock, Port Angeles, Santa Cordes, etc. And he said this is the nicest facility in the circuit. So,
is there? Have you gone to the point where there's an assessment of the docks, like a survey? Did we survey the docks when we picked them up?
We had Tyke go through and do a full analysis of the docks before we had Michael Roth dial all the piles, so we have video and pile inspections.
And we went down to Olympia to RCO, because they were both done with the state back then, with the IAC, now RCO, and we got the original engineer plans, you know, like in City Dock, which is a far older structure. They replaced a lot of the piles, so we know which piles were replaced and which ones weren't replaced and all that sort of thing.
How about, is there a maintenance budget? Like, gosh, we're going to have to spend 50 grand in these to get the fixtures back to where they should be.
Right now, it's all in the single maintenance budget. Now, if you want, we made, about 10 grand on those docks last year?
Not quite.
Yeah, not quite that, probably a little bit more this year, so we've got more activity with the cruise ship. You could dedicate all that money to maintaining it, but,
Or in the facility review, just some way that we go out and say, okay, here's what we got to fix, here's what it's going to cost, here's what we're going to do.
And if you think it's that high a priority, we can just set aside a small part of the maintenance budget dedicated just to those two structures and plan to what we're going to do this year, what we're going to do next year.
It sounds to me like our facilities review is pretty important to get done, so start prioritizing some of these things. And so I think it'd be good to get that thing going sooner than later.
Yeah, well, you and I were just looking at the tide tables here. May's kind of rough, for low tides at the right times. But let me just pass around an email suggesting some dates, and I'm sure there'll be certain dates some of us can't make it, and we'll just keep marching and do the report as it goes. That's really all I have on Union Wharf.
I underscore Pete's comments. So when you did the initial, sounds like you did a pretty good survey. Did you put that all together, make a punch list of what to do and how the conditions, just like you would a vessel?
We did. Adding the cleats, the electrical, the floats, the work.
It was all documented?
I didn't write a report, no. It was just obvious that, the removable floats were the worst part of the whole thing.
The only reason I say that, if you had written a report and made a punch list, then you would be able to kind of prioritize and get itemized and see where your funds were going to be and check it off. And then if the things weren't done, you would know that, that was something that was down the list. And then you would know also how much you were going to need in the future from the budget to create and kind of make a little center out of it.
I think you do a lot of that with the facilities review.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Your pictures, Vigo, we can, I certainly took a look at those and walked out there and looked at them again. And so, yeah.
Yeah, I think that's in my mind, that's the whole purpose of the facilities review, is to just exactly what you said, just go down and figure out, this is the thing that needs to get done first. This is the thing that would be nice to do, but maybe we should do other things before that. And at least have a good idea of what it is, and then just get it all written down so we can remember it. Well, not remember it, so we can see it.
Right.
Refer to it. Here we go.
Documentation.
That's it.
Okay. How new concepts and ideas to be brought before the commission? Brad, take it away.
Okay. Well, I'm hopeful we can achieve another tool in our toolbox. I mean, we've got several now, so something that Eric developed recently for the prioritization matrix. We've got the 30-question matrix that's really essential and even considering a concept for a new capital project.
Anyway, are you talking about a matrix we already have, right?
I'm kind of reiterating what we've got, the tools we have right now, which is
right.
Those two items. And
so, I'm sorry, I didn't mean to interrupt, but those are what?
Again?
The ones that you're talking about. In other words, I'm trying to figure out what kind of tools we're trying to add to.
Okay. We have the 30-question matrix as part of our strategic plan. Mm-hmm. That's already
right,
established.
Right, the strategic plan one, okay.
Right. And then Eric's put together a pretty good draft on the, that we really haven't talked much about it or adopted it as something we're going to use all the time or how we're going to implement it yet.
Right.
Hopefully we will soon.
Right.
But the prioritization matrix that Eric put together, which I think is a pretty good document, and it's easy to understand and it's quite functional.
Like we ran the boat ramp through it.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. So what I'm really hopeful for that in the very near future, and the reason why I say very near future is because we're already making decisions on spending a lot of money on some capital projects now. We've already started the process for the boat ramp and the AWAS and the breakwater. These things are already, these balls are already rolling. And, you know, with that said, what I'm really worried about is that we don't have future problems like have occurred in the past, such as overruns and expenditures. You know, with the admin building, we all know how much that went over budget. And so hopefully we can avoid that in the future. Point Hudson, for example, that's, you know, we've still got ongoing problems with the new marina there that's been going on for 7 years, and it's going to keep going for a while, apparently. We've got some challenges there that we need to, you know, hopefully going to get resolved soon. Those type of issues, I'm hopeful that we could put something together that's going to help us prevent those kind of things from happening in the future. What's pretty common with most large marine facilities that I've been around is that when they enter into a project, they make a decision to enter into a capital project and an investment that's, you know, considerable amount of money and time and effort, that there's usually, it's kind of a boilerplate, actually. I mean, it doesn't have to necessarily be a really complicated thing. It incorporates normal items that you would see in a business plan, like what you probably do, Pete, and some of the stuff you do, but as well as has a means of tracking and prioritizing and looking into the future, what the goals are, and putting it down in paper in such a way that we're sure that all the I's are dotted and the T's are crossed, and we know where the money's coming from. We know, you know, how it's going to be paid for. We know when the finish date is, when the engineer's going to sign off on it, and those things are planned out in a way that any one of us can look at it and understand it and follow it and track it. And if there's any problems or questions or unforeseens that pop up, that we have a means of dealing with it before things get out of hand. And next thing you know, we're faced with us three making a decision on, oh geez, we got another change order coming. You know, and change orders kill projects. And this is a means to avoid change orders, is what I'm getting at. And it's there's no really a large capital project doesn't necessarily have to have change orders. That can be avoided. There's a means to do that, and so I guess that's the best way I could put it right now without, you know, sitting and talking about it for the next hour. But something along those lines, and again, something that's not necessarily just an overly complicated thing full of gobbledygook that, you know, it's nobody can understand. I'm talking about a real simple procedure to put together that maybe we could adopt and we could all agree on. That's what I'm hoping for.
Do you have an example of a document like this? Because I was involved in a building, an administration building, and there were some change orders that, you know, we just simply had to suck up, and they ended up being stuff that was left over from when the yard was reconfigured. We had to make a street be bigger because we, you know, stuff that the city required. And I don't know how a document would be able to anticipate stuff. I mean, because that's the whole nature of a change order, something that wasn't anticipated, and so now you've found it, and I'm not sure how. In other words, I'm all for your idea, but I'm not sure what kind of a format or document or thing you'd have that would be able to anticipate the stuff that's really unanticipated.
Well, it's a helpful tool for in this case, be, you know, management staff here to follow through and to anticipate potential changes in regards to whether it be, you know, because that's my understanding, some of the changes was associated with city requirements. Mm-hmm. Well, those city requirements didn't all of a sudden, you know, get developed at that moment when that administration building was in planning and being constructed. Those requirements were already there. So,
is that true? Is that how it went down?
A number of them came up after we'd already started the project.
But my point is, they weren't new regulations that were developed when the project started.
Yeah, and I totally agree with you. It's just that, you know, having done a lot of big projects, both at the federal level and here, you just can't anticipate everything. And like the sea level rise, it was a FEMA thing that suddenly got dropped on the city. We had already started the construction. We already had engineered the building, designed it, and suddenly we had to raise it 11 inches. You know, as well as arbitrarily, you know, dropped in top of us. And sometimes change orders, it's an opportunity to make things better. You know, that just happened to come up, but, you know, Plain Hudson driving piles, you get the log data from previous piles in the vicinity, and you think you're going to have to drive 30 feet, and ends up you got to drive 45 feet. And so the piles are longer than what you anticipated.
Or the travel lift pier, when they tore up the travel lift pier, and it rotted underneath.
Yeah. Yeah. That's right, Plain Hudson, yeah, that old travel lift pier thing, but it was just... I'm not saying we can't do a better job of trying to anticipate. We should always be doing that. But.
So I have a question on the how. So how do you feel we do now with our projects? Like, you mentioned Point Hudson. I mean, that was a contractor issue as much as anything. I was there through the whole thing, and. But commercial went well, AB went well. I mean, those are pretty big projects. Travel with Pier went well. I mean, it just seems to me that before I want to add another layer of stuff into the mix, I would sure want to examine. I don't even know really how the process works now between staff and Tyke and the engineers and the contractors. I mean, that all has to, I'm sure there's a way that all flows, and I would think I would need to understand how that all flows before I say, okay, now I'm going to add in this other layer that's going to produce X result.
Okay, so you asked me a question. Repeat the question just briefly. So you asked, how do I think how things went in the past? Is that what your question was?
Yeah, the question is, how do you think things have gone in the past? I mean, you mentioned Point Hudson. I agree with Point Hudson. I mean, that was also kind of a lot of unforeseen as far as Keiko's goes and what they did. And so I don't know how you would anticipate. So I guess I'm just looking at if you take the history of, if we say, okay, we're interested in researching this more, and you take the history of the port, how do you think the port is done up to date with how they do projects?
Well, Pete, I'll just say this much in regards to, you know, Point Hudson and the challenging circumstances of Keiko's. It's ultimately the buck stops with us and with Larry and Jim.
Right.
And, if you have a contractor on site that's not behaving as they should be, then it's, there needs to be a process in place to, catch that before it's too late, before things get out of hand, which they did get out of hand. Regards to Keiko's and many aspects, and we're still paying for that problem.
But is that true with like commercial or AV doc? Or?
Well, speaking for the commercial renovation that went on this summer, I don't want to be overcritical, but in regards to some of the things that had to get approved for change orders with that, but I did personally witness some change orders that should have been caught ahead of time. And again, I don't want to make that sound like some sort of a targeted criticism or anything like that. I want to help everybody here, avoid those kind of things and have a process that will help with that. I certainly do not want to add another layer on anybody. Everybody's got way more than enough to do, especially with all these, we all know what we're faced with here. It's a huge amount of capital projects we're faced with limited funds.
Right.
So that's definitely not my goal to add a level. Actually, I want to make it easier. That's really what. But that's my goal is to make it easier to manage these kind of projects. And CJ, you raised your hand a minute ago.
Yes, I did. I think it might be useful, considering Commissioner Hinckley's question, to have the staff explain to the commission how projects are managed and what tools are used.
You want to,
Not tonight. I'll put it together. I'll give you a professional project.
Yeah.
And it might also be good, since probably the next project, Breakwater is going to be off sometime in the distance.
Right.
The boat ramp will probably be the next, we're actually pushing dirt. Maybe we could use that kind of as an example of how a quote typical, and not every project is typical, you know, airport projects are a lot different from, you know, over the water type projects, you know, just because of the environment and all the other restrictions on permits and everything. But it might be a good one to actually develop something like this with a real life case. And then you can go back and say, geez, you know, we missed this thing here and we can tweak it as we go or something. But
yeah, I think, I mean, two things that need to be get fleshed out more is what specifically you're referring to. I mean, what this looks like. It really isn't a business plan.
It has elements of a business plan in it.
Yeah, but a business plan really is looking at, okay, we're going to put money into something and we're going to generate expenses and then we're going to get something out of it. It's going to generate a profit.
True.
And that's not something that a capital investment project's going to do. Okay. But what I'm getting at is, again, I want to see it more fleshed out in the sense that I don't see how that improves the flow of how decisions are made and how a project is, you know, developed and then put on the ground. And that's what you're talking about specifically, is how does that overall flow work, and what are the checks and balances to make sure that everything's getting covered that should get covered. And
I'll come up with some documentation.
Yeah,
no, that's for you.
That would be good.
That's what I was going to
ask. And what we'll do, let staff come up, maybe the travel list here. You know, that was a nice, neat, tidy project, you know.
Sure.
Just kind of, but it has all the same elements that any capital project is going to have. And just kind of put through the steps. You know, there's a lot of documentation that goes in, what the engineer's responsibility for, how many inspections they're going to do, how they do that, you know, our contract with Tyke in that case, what he's responsible for, what staff's responsible for, how change orders, should they come up, get handled, who has that responsibility, myself versus the commission, depending on dollar, you know, kind of lay out that sort of a timeline of a project, you know, just see if you're more comfortable after you look at that.
So I would like to know if you would be able to do something, because I still am not sure what kind of form this would take, you know,
what it looks like.
An example would be really useful for me so I could figure out what we're looking at.
Absolutely. Bertram.
Yeah, I and I propose this discussion. I mean, I think people feel very strongly that there has to be careful business approach to things. And last meeting, I sat there and the commission approved going ahead with the ramp, which I support. But there was no discussion of where the money is coming from, what would happen if there were cost overruns, and where would that money was coming from. And to me, having a plan that includes, so that the commissioners discuss that as well as the philosophical merit of a project, I think are very important, because as you know, you have great responsibilities going forward. And I never heard that in that discussion, and it really concerned me.
Well, this might be a good...
Yeah, and that's what he's mentioning is kind of, it's the keys in what I'm talking about.
Yeah.
Then maybe we could utilize that project as the basis for the example of how this would work in your mind, you know, how you have it envisioned. Right.
I won't be reinventing the wheel. I'm going to do some research on stuff, but this is something that is pretty commonly used in, you know, larger projects, and, you know, at least in waterfront projects that I've been involved with. I just can't pull it out of my back pocket hand.
That's right. Now, this is the first time we're talking about it, so we'll look at that second time we're talking about it. Okay. Washington's Tourism Ports Task Force.
Steve, you're familiar with us a bit from last year. A little bit of background. Two, three years ago, the state raided a number of state accounts because of the budget crisis. And in one case, they closed down the entire Washington Tourism Commission and office. If you look at all the other states around us, Oregon, Idaho, Montana, Colorado, Alaska, British Columbia even, they all still have their tourism offices, and actually every one of them has added money over the last several years to their tourism office. To the extent, like British Columbia, they have something like $64 million now. And if you watch TV, you probably see a lot of ads from other states, you know, come visit us. Well, what happened with us after they got closed, a number of entities involved in tourism got together and formed the Washington Tourism Alliance, the WTA. And we actually were one of the first members. So we pay $1,000 membership along with a lot of the other ports. Port of Seattle is one of the big ones. We lobbied and I won't say sponsored, her name wasn't on it, but this last session, a bill went through. It's Substitute House Bill 2229. And what this did, it came up with a mechanism for not state to fund it again, but a mechanism for entities that are in the tourism business to kind of fund themselves. And the bill actually targeted five areas: lodging, food service, attraction / entertainment, retail, and transportation. And those sectors all were in on this in agreement. And between those five sectors, they're going to come up with $7.5 million that will go to the WTA to do the state's marketing. And the reason why it was in a bill is this allows Department of Revenue and the some other state agencies to kind of be the pass-through for the money from these entities, then to give it out to, you know, to the WTA afterwards. I raised a concern because of RCO experience and some others with the state. When money tends to be passed through Olympia, sometimes it doesn't all come out the other end of the pipe. But the legislation is pretty clear that every dollar that comes in will go back out for tourism. Now, there is a section in here, and I'll just read it, it's not very long. In addition to the five sectors in subsection one of this section, the Washington Tourism Alliance must identify and include in their report, and they have to do a report that's due later this year, other tourism sectors, businesses, and government entities which are part of the tourism industry and could provide additional funding for a state marketing program. So, the short of it, we've been, at least Steve got an invite and I got one. I think you indicated you'd be interested. Next month at the WPPA conference out in Vancouver on Wednesday night, the Port of Seattle and the Port of Walla Walla are going to have a dinner to kind of talk, you know, do ports want to get in on this or not? And I just wanted to tee this up with you. At some point, we'll be asked. I don't think we'll be asked for till later this year, probably. I think there's going to be a number of meetings. I doubt WPPA will take this on as a mandatory thing for all 75 port districts, because there's a lot of port, you know, Port of Longview, it's all rail and container ships, you know, potash and windmill veins and things like that. You know, they're not really into tourism, so I doubt they would want to participate. But an awful lot of other ports are: Friday Harbor, us, Seattle, Bremerton, et cetera. So anyway, I don't know if you're going to go. You're certainly invited to go to this thing, too. We'll learn more about it, and I'm sure we'll talk about it some more in the coming months. So I just wanted to tee it up.
Cool.
Okay, so potential meeting action items. This is going to require unanimous commission approval because we haven't talked about this earlier. Basically, it's something that we found out now. You know, it's one of those things we didn't foresee because it wasn't there earlier, about needing a greenhouse gas emissions resolution to accompany our big grant.
That's just for the airport AWOS grant.
For the airport AWOS grant.
Yeah. Yeah, it in filling out the grant, Eric was working on it the other day, and he came to me. He said the new checklist, and it is a new checklist, requires proof that we're working on the global warming greenhouse gas issue. And so I called the state grant guy about it, and he said all DOT or transportation grants now have to include this as part of the checklist. And I explained to him how we were one of the founding entities on the Climate Action Committee with the city and the county. I sat on it for a couple of years, then Steve, when he came on, took over that seat. So we decided, since the city and the county have already passed the resolution, that a similar resolution essentially saying that we've been part of this and we support the city and county and their efforts, the state said that would be more than acceptable. So we have to get the grant in by the end of the month. So that's why the immediate action, so that Eric can attach this to the grant and submit it.
Okay, so have you read the resolution?
I have.
Okay, yeah. Okay, so since this is a resolution that's only been brought up once, I move that we do this tonight. Is that?
Second.
All in favor?
Aye.
Aye. So that means we have unanimous commission approval to go ahead and approve this. And so since we've agreed to approve it unanimously, let's go ahead and make the motion to approve it.
I'll make the motion to approve.
I second that. All in favor?
Aye.
Okay, done.
And it's good, as I'm sure as we apply for other grants in the future, this will be something we've already gotten in our file now.
It's not 6:30 yet. No.
It's 11.
I gotta go early.
Okay, thanks, Brian.
I'll get out between the break.
Okay, staff comments.
Happy to be here.
I don't have anything.
I think you were down this morning. I think you were down there yesterday. We put some biochar down in our sand filter along Sims Way today, and we'll continue to monitor that. It was a pretty good project, got it done in about 2 days. Cut a lot of poplar and stuff. Two other things. Tomorrow is my usual monthly PDD and RC&D meetings over at John Wayne Marina, which will kill the afternoon. The other thing I'd like to ask, Pete, you had mentioned earlier you'd like to have some meetings down in Quilcene,
yep,
down South County. And I was wondering if maybe we could plan for the June, the first meeting, the workshop in the morning, and then maybe do lunch down there and do a business meeting down there at 1 o'clock.
Good.
If that would be suitable for everybody, or...
Sure.
So we'll have to make some arrangements and book. What we've done in the past, we've last several times, we've used the Timber House, and they've got a room off to the side where we can meet. And
yeah, that'd be good. Then I could see a few folks during May and screw up some interest.
Okay.
Speaking of meeting times, did we change the one before the WPPA convention?
Yeah, we moved the last time. We moved up to Monday the 12th.
Okay.
Workshop in the morning. Okay. And business meeting. That's all I got.
Public comments. Go ahead, Bertram.
There was one of the big significant events that the public really has been upset about, of course, the administration building and the lack of interest in that. The feeling that they could have remodeled the other building for a lot less and had money left over, blah, blah, blah. So the rumor mill is quite active now about the Point Hudson issue. It's all over town about this and towards interface. And at what point is that going to be something which the public can have some input into as far as acquisition of real estate?
I don't know what you're...
I'm sorry, what are you referring to at Point Hudson?
Well, there's a big rumor mill out there about Sea Marine and acquisition by the port.
Yeah.
Well, I have not recommended any commission that we buy that.
Total blank slate here.
Yeah, okay, good. It would be a point at which the public would be weighing in on that, correct?
If we did, I would recommend that we not do it, because I don't want to take back that boatyard and all the cleanup that would have to go with it.
Okay, well, there's a lot of rumors out there about this thing right now.
Poor town.
Well, I guess I hadn't heard of it.
There are a lot, so...
Poor town it's the only place that I live where you can ask 12 people for an opinion and get 13 opinions.
Okay, great.
Yeah, it's not on the table.
Go ahead.
And just a quick comment. I've been boat hauled out for the last couple of weeks, and I noticed that we've got like 4 dumpsters over there, all past bums someplace. Most of the time they're overflowing. I mean, you go to use them, and the lids are up like 45 degrees. Stuff is spilling over the side. They have a pretty appalling mess out there. My other, what I was thinking about was, instead of contracting out to whoever does the pickup, maybe it's time for the port to get their own truck or their own dumpster set up, and just maybe be cheaper to do it that way.
If I might, it's illegal for us to haul garbage. The UTC controls that. There's only one company in town that can do that. We actually got in trouble hauling the cruise ship's garbage last year, and we were caught on the carpet that DM Disposal has to pick up. That problem is being rectified. We're actually going out for a proposal for a whole garbage enclosure. It'll be caged. It's going to be very nice, but we're working on that problem because it is a problem.
And we talked about it before. Yes, there's a lot of taxpayers in town, but that dumpster is for our boat owners and our tenants, not for Joe Blow up on Morgan Hill with their old sofa. But yeah, we find it down there. Yeah. And when you approach them, you know.
It's... Can I ask your name for the record?
It's Lon.
Lon?
Zimmerman.
Okay, well, thanks.
Well, and I would just concur with your comments. I mean, I was down there just recently for a month, and it's like a revolving year right across the street.
It's been really interesting because I'm working on weekends on that darn boat and seeing the characters come in. And
yeah. I mean, they practically line up.
Yeah, you know, people that
bring in their stuff.
Some people, I won't say any names, but I witnessed some local people that work here were dumping stuff on the ground because it wasn't, you know, the dumpster was full, and it's a pretty bad situation.
Well, and we have
sometimes
to remind,
you gotta take drywall off a boat.
Technically, by lease, you know, the marine trades, when they have some of these projects, they're supposed to take care of their own garbage and not, you know, those dumpsters are part of it for the do-it-yourselfers and everything, but it's a...
Well, it really brings out a good point, because I witnessed some people that work here in the yard doing this, and they were dumping crap out of, you know, a can be out of a truck and other stupid things, and maybe it's time for having a little powwow about this and to talk about it. You know, it's like, come on, knock it off, and here's the reasons why you need to not do this.
Yeah, we've got to pay for it, and then they get mad at us when we look sideways at increasing their fees, you know, but...
So what is the policy like if co-op runs a truckload of stuff down there? Are they supposed to be dumping it into a dumpster?
If the co-op, if it's on their leased property, they need to contain it. And co-op does a good job. They have their own dumpster.
Right.
Mm-hmm. Where we run into rubs is when a marine tray is working on a boat that is hauled out by an individual and goes in our yard. There's no differentiation between a do-it-yourselfer and a marine trade working on a boat.
Got it.
But the last commission was very pro, let them be free. And we have entire interiors of boats ripped out and put in our dumpster, and we need to take care of that, which I don't think is fair. I think we need to have a policy in place. Major retrofits need to have their own dumpster service, and we need to discuss that.
You should bring it up. Put it on the agenda. I would like to discuss that.
Yeah, I would too. Maybe this would be incorporated into our BNPs that they're signatory to.
Yeah. You know, the other end of the draconian spectrum here is we could just take the dumpsters out and require every single boat to have their own.
Then you end up with a mess everywhere.
But that's going to be impossible to regulate and monitor. So somewhere in the middle is the right answer. But we'll have a better facility. We already got it designed and everything. And Al's working on it. So.
Yeah. Oh, I'm sorry. Go ahead.
Actually, with regard to the stated draconian measure, maybe that's a good idea to try it for a while. There's nothing to prevent every single yard tenant from hauling their own garbage to the dump. The port doesn't have to haul it. all of us in this county, or not all of us in this county, probably half of us in this room haul our garbage to the dump and our trash. It's not a problem, it's just something we routinely do. We put it in the trailer, we put it in the truck, we go to the dump, we say hi, we pay our 10 bucks, and we're gone. Every tenant in the yard can do the same thing 6 days a week.
Yeah, actually,
why
I think
not try it?
I think it's a good idea.
And then you just cut out that entire expense and manage it.
Yeah. What could happen is we could maybe get into an agreement with the disposal place to leave some empty ones here that are locked, and when somebody comes in and hauls their boat out and say, I want to use, rent that dumpster, and they can drag it over and unlock it and fill it up and lock it up at night, and then that's their responsibility, their contractual agreement with D&M.
And we'll put on the upcoming agenda for discussion.
There you go.
It seemed like before the environmental centers were put in, it was like it invites people to put things in. It's almost like it wasn't such a problem. Now, of course, we have other issues here, but one could, underscoring what he said, we could even take out the environmental centers.
Joe?
Personal comment, I think it would make more sense to take the businesses like myself, Gold Star, the co-op, whatever, and have us have our own personal dumpsters that we're required to use for our customers as they are there. I think if you try to get every single individual in the yard that does his own work to do it, you're going to end up with crap thrown against the fence. You're going to end up, I mean, they're just not going to do it. So I think if the answer is as simple as put a fenced something up that between 8 and 5 can be unlocked and we can monitor who uses it. A lot of the abuse takes place on the weekends. It takes place after hours. People get off of work. They go load up their project from home. When I was on the yard crew, I know of half a dozen times I walked up and said, why are you putting drywall in the dumpster? You didn't take it off of your boat. It doesn't matter. There's nothing in the rules that say I'm a poor tenant. I pay for my mortgage. There's nothing that says what I can put in it. And, you know, I mean, so you would still say something, but I think it's more appropriate to start with baby steps and have each individual business be required to contain their waste from their customers. Because then you have people you can hold accountable. If you had to hold every single individual accountable in the yard guys would never move a boat.
It could be incorporated into the lease, too.
And I agree, because when it's busy, I mean, just the local businesses, we'll fill those things up in a day, you know. But I agree, the same things, if you're gutting the interior of a boat, you don't go put it in rollaway dumpsters, you have a containment facility there for it. I mean, I look at it, and so for me, I don't worry about it. Emptying one of those little dumpsters once a week would be fine, you know. I wouldn't have an issue. Now, if I was much bigger, it would probably be a different expense for me, but so be it. But I would start with holding the businesses accountable as opposed to each individual boat owner. I mean, that could be tough to do.
Well, we'll have that on our agenda next meeting. Any more comments? Staff comments? Your public comments? Oh, Joe?
I just, on that note, as I make a mess throughout your entire boat here, this is just a thank you to the yard crew. I know that lately they've been swamped, and they've been going out of their way to accommodate the businesses, the standby people. Nobody ever gets their boat done on the day they say they're going in the water. So they've been, seem like they're doing a pretty good job of staying flexible on short staff.
Yeah, they've been down to Matt's hernia operation stuff. So.
Thank you, Joe. This is really nice to see appreciation like this. When Terry got his appreciation from Vigo, this makes it really good to have this meeting. Vigo, you had something to say.
Two things. One, my email that I sent out on April 16th, I really didn't mean to offend anybody. Let me just give a quick qualification. We're all molded by our experiences. In 1968, I was in Vietnam, and I insisted on all the truck drivers put five-pound fire extinguishers. One of the fellows put out a fire in a 5,000-gallon tanker in the middle of the village. It was a damn good thing it didn't burn down. 12 years later, the company I was working for, we built a long dock in Lake Union. It was dry sprinklered underneath. It had fire hoses on top. It had life rings on it. there was a drunk fisherman on a weekend that fell in the water. Fortunately, it was right below the life ring. The crew got out, dropped the ring, lifted him out. Otherwise, he'd have been dead because he couldn't swim. So, safety issues, to me, I'm really sensitive to it. So I didn't mean to offend anybody. If I did, I'm sorry. That's just me. It's my background. We take the second point. We take a look at management here at the port. We haven't talked about it, but one of the things that long term what I'd like to see, and I think for the directors it would make it easier for them long term, is a really good business plan every year. The business that I was in, you know, I was on the management side for almost 28 years. Every year we had to have a new business plan. It was very specific, it was measurable, it was time sensitive. And you know what? It made us work. And it allowed the directors to, the managers, in our case, we knew what our marching orders were, and the owner monitored it, and at the end of the year, we had to answer it. That's how they measured it. And so you've got financial tools, you've got a business plan, and for every project that we had a project manager. If we sold a standby generator, let's say it's a $20,000 one, a real cheap one, we still had a project management plan. If we sold a $2.75 million project down in McMurdo, which we did, we had a really extensive project management plan. It was time sensitive, we knew what had to be done, when it had to be done, and any point in time, you could go to that project manager and say, where are we at? Where are the problems? And at the end, there was a checklist, a butt list, we got everything done, and we had a sign-off. We had a sign-off by our own engineer, we had a sign-off by the salesman, and we had a sign-off by the customer. It's just good business. If we could have a good business plan in place that was agreed to, then these directors here would have a better set of marching orders, and they would know more what's expected. Part of what's going on here right now, I may say, there's a little bit too much micromanagement on your guys' part. And that makes it difficult for the directors.
Thank you. Okay, commissioner comments.
One more thing.
Oh, I'm sorry. Your hand is right behind his head, and I can't see it.
Yeah, I just had to get my 2 cents worth in today. I've, near and dear to my heart as well, is this idea of business plan and project management tools. Most of you don't know me. I've spent a long career in project management of very large industrial projects, port projects, offshore projects, power projects, infrastructure projects, all over the world. Most of these projects, you know, were on the high side of $5 million. The majority of them were on the high side of $25 million. None of this, with very few exceptions, was public money. This was private money. These were projects that required a high degree of control, accountability of the management staff, and were very closely monitored by senior management of a private company, not a public company. And they were, for the most part, successful. I've had a few busts. Everybody's had at least one bust, because that's how you learn. But for the most part, I've done projects over and over and over without change orders. How? By carefully determining project goals in advance, by putting project controls in place, by closely monitoring the project controls, closely monitoring the contractor, knowing the mistakes that the contractor was going to make before he ever made them. quite good management practice. I've even had projects where we had credit change orders, where we got money back from the contractor and he willingly gave it to us. We didn't have to sue him. He didn't sue us. These things are possible. It is not necessary to have change orders if you manage your projects well. There's plenty of evidence of it in private industry. I've kind of been watching the Point Hudson breakwater repair. A year ago, the staff received an engineering report that suggested that the breakwater might fail under certain circumstances. Here we are a year later, with, from my viewpoint, no obvious engineering or budgeting progress for that project. Staff might think differently, but, you know, if they do, they haven't made that information available publicly. I recently received a document describing the scope of work that was to be awarded to Coast and Harbor for that project. The scope is disappointing, even though the price is very low, because it sounds like it severely limits the amount of actual investigation in what needs to be done for a breakwater repair. So after a year, knowing that a repair is necessary, we still don't know what the level of repairs would be. Certainly, staff may know, but certainly we don't know. The scope of work also continues to include options for both repair and replacement. I've looked at this structure. I've stood on it in weather where I really didn't want to be outdoors. And in my mind, we don't need to be considering replacement of the breakwater and all the potential project risk that goes with a breakwater replacement. And believe me, when you take a breakwater apart, you are really risking the rest of your infrastructure, even if you do it when you expect good weather. Not to mention the fact that your permitting is much more difficult when you go with replacement as opposed to repair. The other part that disturbs me about this scope of work is it still doesn't require a detailed investigation into the repairs that might be required. How can we evaluate the cost of repair versus the cost of replacement, which we probably don't need, if we're not including an adequate amount of field work, dive time, field engineers out here for days, for the number of days it would take to evaluate all the existing piling against the original design and determine what actually needs to be done for a repair at this point? I don't understand how we're going to have good estimates based upon the current scope of work that's out there. I have attempted by email to interject myself into the project, into the process, because I have no vested interest in the project other than that of a taxpayer that wants to see it successful and done at a low cost. But apparently there's no need for me to be involved, and I would happily help however I could. In closing, I'd like to point out that when we move into a project like this, the first part of the management plan should be to set some goals and to make certain that everyone's involved understands what those goals are. And in a project like this, the first thing you want to do is determine what your expectation of the results. How long do you want this breakwater to last after it's repaired, replaced, or whatever you're going to do to it? Well, you need to look at your financial plans and determine how long it's going to be before you could afford to repair it again. In this case, you know, your financial officer needs to tell you, well, if you spend this much of capital on it now, the next time that you're going to be able to repair it in any significant manner might be 2033 or 2040 or whatever it is. So you need to set a design life in front of the engineers so that they'll know what the expectations are.
Secondly, you need to think about things like, do we really want a boardwalk on top of this? Do we want that liability? Or do we want it to just serve as a breakwater? If you have a boardwalk, then you have annual repairs after the first 5 years. You can almost count on that. And you also have the risk of what happens if some kid climbs over the handrail, you know, and ends up in the riprap or stuck in the piling or whatever the structures are below, and you get into a rather nasty rescue situation. I'm not sure that a boardwalk is essential. It's nice. I like it. 10 years ago, I told my kid to stay off of it. Thirdly, what level of service outages can we tolerate during the project? We certainly can't have it affect the wooden boat festival. That just wouldn't work, would it? We have a number of other windows, including the fish windows, that we have to deal with. We have Commissioner Henke's commercial operation, you know, probably needs access several times a day. We have a shipyard down there that needs regular access. We have plenty of tenants, not all of which we might be able to accommodate down here should we need to do a major repair. So we need a determination very early in the project, goals, as to what level of service outages we can withstand and what level of convenience or inconvenience can be tolerated during the project. And that needs to be clearly stated so that everyone understands that going forward. Why? Because this sort of a factor actually influences design during a project design. Designers will make allowances for that sort of a requirement in their design work. These are examples of project management planning that we need to incorporate into the overall work. The reason that I challenged staff before to give us an example of how they manage projects was I sincerely wanted to hear. I was kind of surprised that they didn't go ahead and just lay out how they manage projects right now, but if they're going to do it later, fine. I'd like to see that as well. But it's important that we incorporate modern project management principles into every capital project that the port carries out. And I will continue to be very vocal about this until I see it happen. It's clear to me that it has not been that way in the past. Thank you.
Thank you for your comments. I think that the reason that staff didn't respond today is because if it's really a business plan, they didn't have it with them. They didn't know they were going to be asked to present it today. And personally, I'm really interested in what you've got. You know, I think that it dovetails quite nicely with what Brad was talking about. I'd like to see an example. I hear all these things about business plans and project management, but frankly, I want to know more about it, but I... All they are is words right now. I'd like to see an outline or an example or something like that. Thank you. I'll get that afterwards. And so thank you for your comments. Okay. Any more public comments? Any more public comments?
No.
Okay. Commissioner comments. Let's see. You went to an RPTPO.
Yeah, I did have a couple comments. I went to the Fort Warren Advisory Committee committee meeting. Kind of a big deal going on out there. May 1st marks the beginning of the Fort Warren Public Development Authority taking over the fort. So a lot of the operations, it's still a kind of a hand-in-hand operation with Parks and Recs, Washington State Parks and Recs, but the PDA will take over a lot of the operations. Dave Rosen's done a great job out there shepherding this through. And a lot of excitement. You know, it's an interesting time because as I sat on this committee and listened to their what's going on and looked at basically also at the marketing plan that David put together, I was excited for the whole area for Port Townsend as well because I think what's going on with the PDA is really going to focus the stakeholders like Centrum and Marine Science Center in a much more concise way than was being done before. And so that focus can be used to generate more people to come into this area. And I think dovetailing with, you know, efforts from Port Townsend will be well served. So That was good. A couple things that were talked about there. One is, I did mention that the port, you know, there's issues about the boat ramp out there. And so I did mention that, you know, we might be open to discussing with Parks and Rec about working in some sort of a maintenance fashion with them to help maintain those ramps better than they're being maintained now. And so I was sitting with Brian, who's the new park ranger out there, and he and I like have a further meeting about that. Secondly, there's a bit of bank sloughing going off on near the steps on our property, and he wanted to show me that at some point, so I was going to go out and take a look at that. But, I also did the Peninsula Regional Transportation Planning Organization, and that was a very interesting meeting. We had a presentation by George Kovic, who is our WASDOT representative, who kind of manages RPTO. And basically, RPTO is, there are regions set up throughout the state, and they provide input to WASDOT in terms of the transportation plan that they put together. And so he kind of did a RPTO 101 on how that works, how that process works, and what our responsibility is as a committee. Secondly, Paul Parker presented for the Washington presented an update on the Washington Transportation Plan. This plan is actually now being redesigned for what they call 2035. So these plans actually go along and get revised every 4 years, and then at some point they click it in and they just say, okay, now we're going to redesign the entire plan. So that process is underway right now. And so he walked through you know, a lot of what's going on in that redesign, how they bring in comment. One of the things he mentioned was something called, what was that called? Voice of Washington Survey. And it was done over a 2-year period where they hired FMC Research. They called 5,600 people statewide and asked them a specific set of questions. And they did it twice. They did it in 2012 and 2013. And all the results from those surveys are being incorporated into, you know, how do we, what roads do we need, how, what better transportation modal systems do we need, and so forth. That was an interesting meeting. That's it.
Thank you. So the level three response has begun, and they've dug up the South Sims Way sand filter out there, and the biochar looks like that's going pretty good.
100 feet or so, approximately.
Yeah. It was interesting to see how the filter system wasn't working because of some really ridiculous oversights that had happened in regards to pipes being blocked off by
gravel.
Some, yeah.
Well, you got to remember too, and Al brought it up to me, and he's right. When they did that back in the 90s, copper and zinc weren't even monitored. You know, the sand filters on the outside were put in for the turbidity and catch runoff from the road, and nobody was worried about copper back then. But
well, I was referring to the fabric had literally been laid over the pipe, so yeah, it was causing it to back up and go through the bypass.
Right.
But anyway, that's,
yeah,
at this point, you know, that's getting corrected. But I guess what I want to ask about, you know, the next stages of this is going to be a bit of a monumental project for the central sand filter system that runs from the co-op all the way, you know, right, to practically to Yoakum's place, yeah, here. And
moving a boat.
So. Yeah, it's going to be very disruptive for the yard for a considerable amount of time. There's engineering to be done as to what's going to be going into that trench, whether it's going to be a concrete vault system or what it's going to be, and the costs associated with that, as well as the lost revenue that we're going to experience as a result of all this downtime. I mean, it's going to be a mess for quite a while. So that's the reason why I'm bringing it up is there a way that you or Al or both of you or whatever can update us on exactly what we're faced with and the anticipated cost for this?
We got to bring the engineering scope of work to you because it's over my pay limit. It's going to be about $27,000, so it'll be at the first reading, and we can have Al here to.
That'd be great.
You know, go through the whole thing and lay it out. There's essentially three sand filters we're going to deal with, and some are easier than others, but we'll.
We don't have to rip it all up at once.
No, we can say just move it around. Just that doggy's got to be careful that, and as Joe alluded to with boats, a boat owner will say, I just need 2 weeks in the yard, and all of a sudden a month later he's still sitting there, and boats get torn apart to where we can't now move them. So we got to be careful about making sure that longer term projects we start moving off to the safe zones and just kind of get prepared for that once we get some dates and all that.
Okay, thank you.
You've all had, if you want another copy, we can get your copy of the level 3 response. There's a lot of projects that will be coming up, and now that DOE approved it, the 12-month clock is ticking. So as we do them, it's going to be constant. We finish one, and we'll start the next one. So next week, we got the experimental totes coming in to test the roof runoff. So.
Okay, thank you. Okay. I went to the energy lunch this time, and the topic was a riveting how to permit public infrastructure projects in this name. And I was surprised that anybody showed up with such a boring sounding topic, but it actually was a very interesting speaker. He was the head guy of Seabreeze Power, which is a British Columbia company. They built a huge wind farm on the very tip of Vancouver Island, and it's generating a lot of power. And what he was doing was telling us, number one, how they did it, and he said it only cost $700 million, and it's going. And what the result of it is, and actually for such a boring topic, I found it riveting. What they're going to do is create a circuit. Right now, all of the power that goes from hydropower Bonneville and actually Canada has a substantial amount of hydropower. And it goes across the I-5 corridor at Blaine, but it's just a single line, and that's it. And here in Port Townsend, we're at the end of that single line. Well, actually, Port Angeles is a little bit more at the end than we are, but we're still at the end. And on the top part, going down to Vancouver Island, Victoria is on the end of their line. And so we end up getting some pretty crappy power sometimes as far as quality of power and as far as reliability. And so what his $700 million project was, that he kind of explained the really convoluted processes of how he got it financed and permitted, is going to put an ultra-high voltage line under the sound, under the straits, from Victoria to Port Angeles, and then we're going to have a complete circle. And electricity likes to run in circles, and it's going to really make our power more reliable and cleaner and much more robust. And by golly, it's all because of these guys in Canada. And the model that they had to do it just completely blew my mind. They're selling electricity in Vancouver at $69 a megawatt, which is like 6.9 cents a kilowatt hour, which is the wholesale. Well, they got a contract to sell it to them for more. The city of Victoria said, we'll pay more to you guys to bring it down from the wind farm, and they used that difference in between the two revenues to finance this big thing, and we're getting the benefit of it here in the Olympic Peninsula, which I thought was a pretty cool deal. And so that's all that I have. The next meeting will be a public workshop on Monday, May the 12th, and then we'll have a following the business meeting at 1 o'clock. And so there's no executive session today. So this meeting stands adjourned.